Memoirs of the Reverend George Whitfield, Chapter 11. From his arrival in London in the year 1742 to his embarking for America, 1744. On Mr. Whitfield's arrival in London, he found a new awakening at the tabernacle which had been enlarged. He observes, "I am employed, and glory to rich grace. I am carried through the duties of each day with cheerfulness and almost uninterrupted tranquility. Our society is large, but in good order. My master gives us much of his gracious presence, both in our public and private ministrations." In March 1743, he went to Colchestershire, where people appeared to be more eager to hear the word than ever. "Preaching," says he, "in Colchestershire is now like preaching at the tabernacle in London." And in a letter dated April 7th, he says, "I preached and took leave of the Colchester people with mutual and great concern on Sunday evening last. It was past 1 in the morning before I could lay my weary body down. At 5 I rose again, sick for want of rest, but I was unable to get on horseback and ride to Mr. T's, where I preached to a large congregation who came there at 7 in the morning. At 10 I read prayers and preached, and afterwards administered sacraments in Stonehouse Church. Then I rode to Shroud and preached to about 12,000 to Mr. G's Field, and about 6 in the evening to a like number on Hampton Common. Next morning he preached near Dursley to some thousands, and about 7 reached Bristol and preached to a full congregation at Smith's Hall, and on Tuesday after preaching set out for Waterford in South Wales." Footnote. The work begun by Mr. Jones spread itself far and near in North and South Wales, where the Lord had made Mr. Howell Harris an instrument of converting several clergy, as well as laymen. The power of God at the sacrament under the ministry of Mr. Rowland was large enough to make a person's heart burn within him. At 7 in the morning, I have seen perhaps 10,000 from different parts in the midst of a sermon crying, ready to leap for joy. Associations were now formed, and monthly or quarterly meetings appointed, and a closer connection established between the English and Welsh, so that several came over to assist. When at Carmarthen, he writes, "It was the great sessions. The justice desired, I would say, till they rose and they would come. Accordingly, they did, and many thousands more, and several people of quality." End of footnote. Where he opened the association which he and his brethren had agreed upon, and was several days with them, setting the affairs of the society. He continued in Wales some weeks, and preached with great apparent success. In the latter end of April, returned to Colchester after having in about 3 weeks traveled about 400 English miles, spent 3 days in attending associations, and preached about 40 times. At one of the associations held in Wales, a motion was made to separate from the established church. But, says Mr. Whitfield, "by far the greater part strenuously opposed it, and with good reason. For as we enjoyed such great liberty under the mild and gentle government of His present Majesty King George, I think we could do him, our country, and the cause of God more service in ringing up and down, preaching repentance towards God and faith in our Lord Jesus Christ to those multitudes who would neither come into church or meeting, but who are led by curiosity to follow us into the fields. This is a way in which God has had affixed His seal for many years past." In May, he went back to London, once more, as he expressed it, to attack the Prince of Darkness in Moorfields during the holidays. The congregations were amazingly great and much affected, and by the collections made now and formerly, he had the pleasure of paying all that he owed in England, and of making a small remittance to his friend Mr. Habersham for Georgia. About the middle of June following, he again left London and went to Bristol, where he continued for some time preaching twice every day and 4 times on Sunday. Afterwards, he preached at Exeter to very large congregations where many of the clergy attended, who were successfully connected with him. Among these were the Reverend J. Cennick, and it's C-E-N-N-I-C-K, then in cooperation with Mr. Whitfield. He was preaching in the high street of the city of Exeter on a large open spot of ground, and surrounded by a great number of people, by some of whom he had been previously ill-treated. An incident is worth relating here to show how God sometimes confronts his servants' enemies. Mr. C was expectating on the blood of Christ when a profound butcher who was among the crowd said, "If you love blood, you shall presently have enough," and ran to get some to throw on him. A Mr. Saunders, who for several years drove what was called road work, post chases not then being much in use, was also a bystander, and though at the time an entire stranger to divine things, from a sense of ill usage Mr. C. had received and was likely to receive, felt an inclination to defend him. Seeing the man come with a pail nearly full of blood, he calmly went to meet him, and when he came even with him, suddenly caught hold of the pail and poured it over the man's head. This drew the attention of the riotous part of the people from the preacher to Mr. Saunders, who with some difficulty escaped their rage by taking shelter in a house and was obliged to leave the town very early in the next morning. Mr. Saunders was afterwards awakened by a true sense of his condition before God under the ministry of the late William Romania at St. George's, Hanover Square. He continued his occupation as a coachman till about the year 1745 or 46, when he appointed body coachman to His Majesty, and so continued till about the year 1780, when he petitioned for a dismission on account of his age. Being about 70 years old, he was granted with regret. His Majesty, when riding on horseback through Kensington, if he saw his old servant walking, would often inquire about his health, and the same regard was shown by the other branches of the royal family. On the 13th August 1799, at the advanced age of 89, he sweetly breathed his happy soul into the bosom of his Redeemer. In August, Whitfield returned to London, but made no long stay there. "I thank you," says he, "to a correspondent for your kind caution to spare myself, but evangelizing is certainly my providence. Everywhere effectual doors are open. So far from thinking of settling at London, I am more and more convinced that I should go from place to place." Accordingly, we find him in the months of October, November, and December, preaching and traveling through the country as if it were the middle of summer, at Avon WILTS, and several other cities, including Biddy Ford. Footnote. Here is a clergyman about 80 years of age, but not above 1 year old, in the School of Christ. He lately preached three times and rode 40 miles the same day. A young O-X-O-N-I-A-N, who came with him, and many others, were deeply affected. I cannot well describe with what power the word was attended. "Dear Mr. Hervey, one of the first Methodists at Oxford, and who was lately a curate here, had laid the foundation." And a footnote. St. Genis in Cornwall, footnote. "Many prayers were put up by the worthy rector and others for an outpouring of God's blessed Spirit. They were answered. Arrows of conviction flew thick and so fast, and such a universal weeping prevailed from one end of the congregation to the other, that good Mr. J., the minister, could not help going from seat to seat to speak, encourage, and comfort the wounded souls." End of footnote. Birmingham, footnote. "It is near 11 at night, and nature calls for rest. I have preached 5 times this day, and weak as I am, through Christ strengthening me, I could preach 5 times more." End of footnote. Kidder Minister, K-I-D-D-E-R-M-I-N-S-T-E-R, footnote. "I was kindly received by Mr. Williams. Many friends were at his house. I was greatly refreshed to find that a sweet savor of good Baxter's doctrine, works, and discipline remained to this day." End of footnote. And Broomsgrove. "Nor did he feel his health much impaired, though it was so late in the season. He observes, indeed, that he had got a cold, but adds, 'The Lord warms my heart.' February 1741, he lost his only child, an event which tended to keep him humble. Before its birth, his mind was so impressed that he publicly declared that the child would be a boy and hoped he would live to preach the gospel. But his fond expectations were speedily blasted, the infant dying when but 4 months old. This was no doubt very humbling to the father, but he was helped to make the wisest and best improvement of it. 'Though I am disappointed,' says he, writing to a friend of a living preacher by the death of my son. Yet I hope what happened before his birth and since at his death has taught me such lessons as, if duly improved, may render his mistaken parent more cautious, more sober-minded, more experienced in Satan's devices, and consequently more useful in the future labors of the Church of God. Footnote. In speaking to a friend of this child, he said, he would not part with him for the whole world, but if God should demand him, he should have him at a moment's warning. God, he added, took him at his word and deprived him of his child by a sudden indecision. March 3rd, he was obliged to attend the assize at Colchester. The occasion was this. In the summer of 1734, the Methodists had been severely persecuted by the mob, especially at Hampton, where many were hurt and the lives of the preachers threatened. Other means having been tried in vain, Mr. Whitfield, with the advice and assistance of his friends, resolved to seek the protection of the law and lodged an information against the Hampton rioters in the court of the King's Bench. Facts being proved and the defendants making no reply, the rule was made absolute and an information filed against them. They pleaded not guilty. The cause was referred to the assize and that's ASSIZES in Colchester. After a full hearing, a verdict was given for the plaintiff, and all the defendants were brought in guilty. This prosecution had a very good effect. The rioters were greatly alarmed, but the intention of the Methodists was only to show them what they could do and then forgive them. About this time, several anonymous papers entitled Observations upon the Conduct and Behavior of a Certain Sect, usually distinguished by the name of the Methodists, were printed and handed about in the religious societies of London and Westminster and given to many private persons with strict injunctions not to part with them. Mr. Whitfield, having accidentally had the hasty perusal of them and finding many queries concerning him and his conduct contained therein, and having applied for a copy which was refused him, thought it was his duty to publish an advertisement desiring, as he knew not how soon he might embark for Georgia, a speedy open publication of the said papers, that he might make a candid and impartial answer. He had reason to believe the Bishop of London was concerned in composing or revising them, but that he might not be mistaken, after the publication of the advertisement, he wrote the Bishop a letter, wherein he desired to know whether his lordship was the author or not, and also desired a copy. The Bishop sent word he should hear from him. Sometime after, Mr. Owen, printer to the Bishop, left a letter for Mr. Whitfield, informing him that he had orders from several of the bishops to print the observations with some few additions for their use, and when the impression was finished, Mr. Whitfield should have a copy. For these reasons, Mr. Whitfield thought it proper to direct his answer to the observations to the Bishop of London and the other bishops concerned in the publication of them. This answer occasioned the Reverend Mr. Church's expostulatory letter to Mr. Whitfield, to which he soon replied with thanks to the author for prefixing his name. Being invited by Mr. Smith, a merchant then in England, in the name of thousands to make another visit to America, he took a passage with that gentleman in a vessel going from Portsmouth. But the captain refusing to take him, as he said, for fear of spoiling the sailors, he was obliged to go to Plymouth, where he was in immediate danger of being assassinated. In my way, says he, I preached at Wellington, where a Mr. D-A-R-R-A-C-O-T-T had been a blessed instrument of doing much good. Extra also I revisited, where many souls were awakened to the divine life. At Edenford, where good Mr. Hervey had been curate, we had much of the power of God, and also at Kingsbride. But the chief scene was at Plymouth, and the dock where I expected least success. Well, at Plymouth, four gentlemen came to the house of one of his particular friends, and with much seeming kindness inquired after him, desiring to know where he lodged. Soon afterwards, Mr. Whitfield received a letter informing him that the writer was the nephew of Mr. S., an attorney at New York, that he had the pleasure of supplying with Mr. Whitfield pleasure of supping with Mr. Whitfield at his uncle's house, and desired his company to sup with him and a few more friends at a tavern. Mr. Whitfield sent him word that it was not customary for him to sup abroad at a tavern, but should be glad of the gentleman's company to eat a morsel with him at his lodgings. He accordingly came and supped, but was observed frequently to look around him and to be very absent. At last he took his leave and returned to his companions at the tavern, and being by them interrogated what he had done, answered that he had been used so civilly, he had not the heart to touch him. Upon which another of the company, lieutenant of the navy, let a wager of 10 guineas that he would do his business for him. His companions, however, took away his sword. At that, it was midnight, and Mr. Whitfield, having preached to a large congregation and visited the French prisoners, had gone to bed. When the landlady came and told him that a well-dressed gentleman desired to see him, Mr. Whitfield, imagining it was somebody under conviction, desired him to be brought up. He came and sat down at the bedside, congratulated him on the success of his ministry, and expressed much concern at being detained from hearing him. Soon after, he broke out into the most abusive language, and in a cruel and cowardly manner beat him in bed. The landlady and his daughter, hearing the noise, rushed to the room and seized upon him, but he soon disengaged himself from them and repeated his blows on Mr. Whitfield, who, being apprehensive that he intended to shoot or stab him, underwent all the surprise of a sudden and violent death. Afterwards, a second came into the house and cried out from the bottom of the stairs, "Take courage, I am ready to help you." But by the repeated cry of murder, the alarm was now so great that they both made off. The next morning, Mr. Whitfield, I was to expound at a private house and then to set out for Biddeford. Some urged me to stay and prosecute, but being better employed, I went on my intended journey, was greatly blessed in preaching the everlasting gospel, and upon my return was well paid for what I had suffered. Curiosity had, having led perhaps 2,000 more than ordinary, to see and hear a man that had narrowly escaped being murdered in his bed, and I trust in the 5 weeks' time, while I waited for the convoy, hundreds were awakened and turned unto the Lord. At the dock also, near Plymouth, a glorious work was begun. Could the fields between Plymouth and the dock speak, they could tell what blessed seasons were enjoyed there. The following narrative shows the power and influence of his preaching here. The late Reverend Henry Tanner of Exeter, in the year 1743, removed to Plymouth to obtain employment as a shipbuilder. Here it pleased God to call him by his grace under the ministry of Mr. Whitfield. Being at work, he heard from a considerable distance the voice of that zealous man of God who was preaching in the streets or fields, probably between Plymouth Town and Dock. He immediately concluded that the preacher was a madman, and determined with 5 or 6 more of his companions to go and knock him off from the place on which he stood. And for the purpose of more effectual injuring the mad parson, they loaded their pockets with stones. When, however, Mr. Tanner drew near and perceived Mr. Whitfield extending his arms in the most pathetic language, inviting poor lost sinners to Christ, he was struck with amazement. His resolution failed him. He listened with astonishment and was soon convinced that the preacher was not mad, but was indeed speaking the word of truth in soberness. Mr. Whitfield was then preaching from Acts chapter 17, verse 19 and 20. "May we know what this new doctrine whereof thou speakest is, for thou bringest certain strange things to our ears." He went home much impressed and determined to hear him again the next evening. He attended. Mr. Whitfield was wonderfully fervent in prayer. His text was Luke 24, verse 47, "And that repentancy and remission of sins should be preached in his name among all nations, beginning at Jerusalem." After speaking of the hideous sin of the Jews and of the Roman soldiers, "We were the instruments of perpetrating the cruel murder of the Lord of life," Mr. Whitfield, turning from the spot where Mr. Tanner had stood near his side, said, "You are reflecting now of the cruelty of those inhuman butchers who imbued their hands in his innocent blood," when, suddenly turning around and looking intently at Mr. Tanner, exclaimed, "Thou art the man." These words, sharper than any two-edged sword, pierced him to the heart. He felt himself the sinner who, by his iniquities have crucified the Son of God. His sins stared him in the face. He knew not how to stand in an agony of soul. He was forced to cry, God, be merciful to me, a sinner. The preacher then, in melting language, proclaimed the free and superabounding grace of God in Jesus Christ, which was commanded to be preached, first of all, to Jerusalem sinners, the very people who had murdered the Prince of Life, and from which a gleam of hope beamed into their heart. Under this sermon, many other persons were convinced of sin and brought to God. The next night, Mr. Tanner heard Mr. Whitfield preach again. His subject was Jacob's Ladder. From this discourse, he obtained such views of the person, character, and love of the great mediator as enabled him to lay hold on the hope set before him, and to rejoice in Christ Jesus. The advances which Mr. Tanner made in religious knowledge and experience were exceedingly rapid. By reviewing his former state, he learned to pity the souls of his fellow men, whom he saw perishing for the lack of knowledge. Having experienced the power of divine truth on his own heart, he became strongly inclined to the ministry of the gospel. In 1754, he hired a room and soon began to preach. His labors were remarkably blessed, and he seemed never to preach one sermon in vain. A circumstance now occurred, which perhaps deserves to be recorded. A man who lived in the quarter in which Mr. Tanner preached was so very much exasperated at having a Methodist preaching room near him that he determined to remove to another part of the city. He did so, but afterwards returned to the same house. Here he was taken ill, and was confined to a room so near the preaching place as to be able to hear Mr. Tanner. He heard him pray with great fervor for the king and all classes of men. His prejudices were overcome. He began to think well of him. Mr. Tanner introduced some part of the articles and homilies of the Church of England to prove that the doctrines which he taught were consistent with him. The next morning the man brought a Bible with the articles that he might judge the truth of what he had heard. When he read, he said to those about him, "This is just as this man preaches." He afterwards ventured to go into the room where the man made the gospel, the power of God, unto his salvation. This man afterwards went into the neighboring villages to speak to his fellow sinners, and there is reason to believe that his attempts were blessed to many souls. In 1769, Mr. Tanner built the tabernacle in Exeter, where he labored for many years, preaching three times every Lord's Day and twice in the week, besides engaging in more private exercises. Mr. Tanner did not confine his ministry to Exeter. He looked with compassion on this particularly dark neighborhood. At the request of the late Reverend Augustus Montagu Toplady, he used to preach at Broad Hembury. He likewise labored in the towns of Moreton, Hampstead, Credon, and Topham, and in the various villages in the vicinity. In each of these places he was met with great opposition. Yet some in heaven and others on their road thither bless God that they ever heard him. Mr. Tanner's exertions continued unabated till within a short time of his death. His frequent petition was that he might die in his master's work. His petition was granted, for he was taken out of the pulpit, being unable to finish his sermon, and shortly afterwards fell asleep in Jesus, March 30, 1805, age 86. This is but one of the numerous instances showing Whitfield's marvelous instrumentality in forwarding the kingdom of his master. End of chapter 11, having been read by Peter John Parisi, also known as Brian Dean. None of my audio is copyrighted. Please feel free to make as many copies as you desire to the glory of God.